The war in Iran risks destroying the US economy and the NATO alliance. Europe is heading back to the dark ages. These are some of the major stories from our upcoming Trumpet print magazine. But the cover and the focus of the magazine is Lift Up Your Eyes, the inspiring Artemis II moon mission. We'll look at all of these stories and more on today's Trumpet World. The May-June 2026 Trumpet print magazine is hitting mailboxes soon if you don't have your copy already. I'm joined by Assistant Managing Editor Philip Nice to give a bit of an inside look at the latest issue with God's Space Program as the cover article. So Philip, thanks for joining me. And with everything going on in the world, with all of these pretty dramatic and very sobering stories, perhaps you can talk through the decision of why this story is the cover story.
Well, it's good to be with you again doing the May June issue here of the Trumpet. I actually have it in hand this time, so we were just talking about how it's nice to have the actual copy in your hands, and I don't think we say enough. You should subscribe and get this if you haven't already. Get the physical copy. Don't just kind of check it online. That's a good option too. But anyway, it's nice to have it in hand. And I know for me personally, this isn't the reason it's on the cover, but for me personally, nothing has caught my attention kind of inadvertently like the Artemis mission. Despite America's inexplicable naming of NASA missions after Greek gods that we've never, that have never meant anything to America, besides that, this was a wonderful news event just from start to finish. It was just extremely inspiring. And you had brought it up. You had put it on everyone's radar, no pun intended. And we were ready for it. And we wanted it to be the cover, but it's usually things just, events overtake and you don't use it. There are many other, like you were kind of saying, there's many other cover worthy events going on right now, if you want to call it that, just dramatic and important, and events that are match Bible prophecy happening. But I think I'm glad that the managing editor, Mr. Joel Hilliker, stuck with this, lift up your eyes perspective. This is a phrase that he really centered on in his morning briefs for the Trumpet. You can subscribe to the morning brief, Trumpet brief, if you haven't already, there at thetrumpet.com. But it kind of took some, an intentional decision to let's still put this on the cover, even though it's not just about to happen, or it didn't just exactly happen. It's not the most recent thing. And then interestingly, for me, I could just get all into how wonderful that mission was and how human it was. Like, it was just this amazing contrast between the farthest away from Earth that human beings have ever been, and the blackness of space and the barrenness of the moon, and this just absolute humanity of the four astronauts who were on that mission. Just a lot of love, a lot of laughter, and a lot of positivity, and a lot of just kind of deep perspective, which this issue does get into. But the cover story, the editor-in-chief's from the editor, kind of hits that, but then gets straight into the larger significance of the space program and what he has done with, it's been like the Mars rover and a few other space stories over the years. He explains why that inspires people, because on the one hand, you're into rockets, maybe you're not, but there, it seems like a lot of people have this fascination that they can't even explain, of the stars and of, and I might have mentioned to you before on this program, but when I was younger, I thought, there's nothing more impractical than the stars in astronomy, but there's a reason we are interested in it. And And there's a reason we need to lift up our eyes. Even, you know, that phrase from the Bible is just so powerful, because down here, when we're looking at things that are happening here on the surface, there's a lot of things that will get you down and discourage you. But, you know, we've heard recently about the importance of encouragement, and this really encourages, and this really explains this yearning in us for space and for the stars. And Mr. Fleury points out that the Bible actually talks about planting the heavens. It talks about man does have a connection to the moon and to the stars. And so it's just wonderful to be almost literally lifted up out of everything that's happening on the surface, and to understand that we do have a connection. And it's not just to build little, you know, tiny little airlocks and tiny little bases on the moon or something like that. It goes way, way beyond that.
And maybe you find this too. I find that being in the news a lot, sometimes it's hard to predict what's going to cut through to the general public. You know, on any given thing, we might see 100 stories, but only one of those is going to really cut through. And I think it's like that on space news. And you know, this was one story, the Artemis II, alongside a whole load of other stories. You know, there's been the Vera Rubin Observatory, there's been the Euclid Telescope, like. And a lot of these don't really cut through. They don't become a bigger moment in society. I think Artemis II did. And I didn't really expect that. That's not to say, you know, I was still excited about it. I just didn't think it would catch on just quite the way that it did. And I think, like you say, part of that was because of the astronauts themselves. And I think they made some wonderful statements. And we had there's a second article on this from Mr. Hilliker that I think draws attention to just some of those, but they really picked some pretty thoughtful, high caliber people, I think, for this mission, that, you know, not just in terms of their technical ability as scientists or maneuver a spacecraft, but just even in kind of deep thinkers and articulating some of what they were seeing and just some of their statements about American society, I thought were pretty good as well. Yeah, I thought this event was a wonderful opportunity because it cut through more than necessarily I was expecting it to. I mean, I think it deserved to, but you know, this was also, you know, we landed on the moon, what, 40, 50 years ago? This didn't even land. Like, from that perspective, I was like, okay, well, when that landing, that's going to be a huge deal. I think it's Artemis 4 now. Like, the unmanned Artemis mission, Artemis 1, didn't didn't cut through, but this one really did grab the imagination of a planet, and there's a powerful opportunity there to then say to see what to even see I think what God created in the human imagination, and how dramatic and exciting man's future out there in the universe is. And I felt with the cover there's a little bit of, is this still going to be current by the time it starts landing on mailboxes? That's always a challenge, especially with the double issue, the May-June issue. But it's a wonderful opportunity to really get a positive story out there.
Right. Yeah. And you know, Mr. Fleury calling it God's space program. He just goes through these scriptures, and you might have seen this in the trumpet before if you've been a subscriber for years. Psalms, you know, Romans, Psalm 8, Romans 8, Hebrews 5, and even just kind of talking about the Garden of Eden. And just some, I was reading this morning, there's just so much in the Bible about God as the creator of the surface of the earth. Like, this is understanding him as creator. That's actually going to play into our next issue as well. But understand, you know, if you believe in one creator God, if you believe in Genesis 1:1, then it changes everything else. And the way he talks about, you know, God's space program just kind of helps you zoom out, and even more than the Artemis mission helped people to zoom out and just, you know, realize we're all human beings. you know, we have a lot of problems there, but we're not meant to be like, there's something, you know, we're meant to be, we're meant to transcend this. And I just think that simple title of God's Space Program was a really good choice, and that there's, you know, just it connects the most, like I said, the most impractical thing, you know, the other side of the moon, you know, what's that really going to do in my life right now, to my life and my little struggles and my little, you know, like he says here, hope and correction, you know, there's, it connects that creator who makes just indescribably large structures of stars and gases and all of this stuff out there, as it's depicted there in the layout. That's the same God that's helping me through my problems, that's waiting for me to overcome, you know, those things are connected. So I, this is something I bring up a lot, but, you know, world news, I mean, this transcends world news. But this transcendent type of news, the world news, and then our personal lives, it's all connected. And that's why the Bible is so powerful. And it's not just, you know, religion. It's not just this thing that, you know, that kind of can fit in a little box. And then, well, I have my, you know, my life outside of that box. It's the Bible really explains it all. And there's a reason why it's that same creator of those stars, structure, those out, you know, on the back acre at my house last night, looking at those stars, and you can see planets, and you can see, yeah, and I could actually see satellites, which sometimes I can't see. And I just was thinking about how, you know, that creator God is the same, is the God of Genesis 1:1, and then he's the God of everything through Revelation. And so it's all connected in that way.
I really like this phrase. I mean, this is putting things like the space program on the cover is something that's we've got a fairly long history of doing. And I love this phrase from the February 2004 Trumpet print, where, again, Mr. Flurry had a cover article. That time the cover was Mars. It's all about your incredible human potential. And they had he had an article in there, Mars Reveals Your Human Potential. And he concludes by saying, in this world full of terrorism, we need our universe dream. We need to see the stupendous possibility and the eternal majesty. That is what will motivate us to achieve our lofty calling. Nothing can stimulate our imagination like comprehending our universe potential. Nothing. And I just love the way that Mr. Flurry uses these different things to try and comprehend our universe potential. You know, that article was about Mars and these various different robot probes. I think it was the Spirit rover that had just landed on Mars, and the images it was spent sending back. This time, one of the key phrases was about God's space program, and drawing parallels between, you know, NASA. You have a time of intensive training as they prepare people to go out into space, and, well, you look at several scriptures in the Bible. He focuses most of this on Isaiah chapter 51, that talks about planting the heavens. And makes the point, well, God wants to take mankind out into the universe, but the kind of power that you're talking, just even to get out into the universe, let alone change the universe and plant the heavens, well, that requires a period of training to use. And just like NASA astronauts, it's rigorous training. They've got to train through adverse conditions, and, well, God is working and God is training, but what's the real training necessary to beautify the universe? And mankind has a lot of physical technical knowledge, but what he really needs is the ability to get on with fellow man. I mean, otherwise you're just going to fill a universe full of war that is no improvement over what we have right now. And so the focus then has to be on, well, how to get on with fellow man. Focus, it's training from the Bible, but training on applying that Bible knowledge in your life. And that's a core part of God's space program. Mr. Flurry concludes, God is calling man to become perfect as God is perfect. That is what it will take to plant the heavens. And so anyway, I just appreciate the way that he latches onto some different aspects in some of these different articles. And it's all designed to just really set your imagination on fire and help fill it with what is coming.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned already a little bit about the other major article on the moon mission. Well, it's here, the moon mission and the overview effect by managing editor Joel Hilliker. And it says, if you feel connected to humanity and humanity to the universe, there's a good reason why. And this gives a little bit more details about the mission itself. Just kind of some of the achievements and so forth. Further to your comment just now, there's this quote from some NASA, not the NASA administrator, but one of the officials, and I keep coming across it. And he said, because people are talking about, I don't know if you can put it on the screen, but there's so many pictures of this crew that are where they're just like so happy. They're friends. They're happy to be together. They're happy to be doing important work, overcoming, you know, using their training, doing something unprecedented, like you were just talking about. And people, you know, we're responding to that and saying that some people call them their emotional support astronauts. So people were just commenting on the positivity, if you want to, you know, boil it down to that. And this NASA administrator said, I just think that's a good example of why we even do these missions, like why NASA itself even does these missions, why human beings even do these missions. And he said, if we can't take love out to the stars, like what are we even doing? Why would we even go? And I thought that was a neat moment, which means a lot more if you really know, you know, if you really know what love is and you really know the plan of man and the incredible human potential, as Herbert Armstrong put it. That's a book that you would be good to read, The Incredible Human Potential. I think that captures why this broke through, is people they saw humanity out there, you know, and what was interesting to me is they launched, and that there's a lot of excitement about the launch. I mean, that's an exciting thing, to say the least. Big rocket taking off the ground. But then the next thing that just was breaking through on the internet was all these pictures of the Earth from space. And that was really interesting to me, because we've all seen that before, right? Like, you got a picture of the Earth behind you right now. It's not like we've never seen the full circle of the Earth. We saw that on Apollo 8, I think, in the 60s. So, you know, there's all kind of dazzling images on the internet, and this is a picture of the full circle of the Earth. Some of them, you know, might be the astronaut's face and then the window and then the Earth. People were going crazy. People were just, I mean, that's not a great way to say it. People are just very excited about that. And it was very uplifting. And Mr. Hilliker talks about this overview effect. There's actually this phenomenon, this set of repeating conditions, that when people get up, I actually feel a little bit when I get in an airplane and I'm looking down and I see, you know, buildings are this big and cars are this big. But certainly when you're up in space, and certainly when you see the curvature of the Earth, people get this perspective, literal perspective, and they just, you know, it's not magical and it's not universal. I'm sure some people don't, but many people get this like care for that planet and the people on it, and they just sort of have this kind of their eyes kind of open a little bit, and they think more deeply about it. One of the questions that they asked that Artemis crew when they came back was she was from space.com, I think, and she asked, the journalist asked, you know, a certain astronaut in the Apollo missions, when he came back, he had such a profound spirit, you know, I'll just say spiritual experience, that he devoted the rest of his life to understanding human consciousness, right? So here's these guys that are all about, you know, mission systems and science and, you know, all these types of things, but their minds are often expanded to just understand there are conscious human beings, you know, like you were just kind of saying, there's this amazing thing that's happening on the earth, these people interacting with each other. And like you said, training, we need to be trained to interact with each other better. We need to be trained to in the laws of cause and effect, in the same way an astronaut has to learn the laws of cause and effect very, very well. And so this, I would really encourage you, if you're wanting just something that's not political, you know, just a little bit of news that doesn't involve President Trump, just a little bit of, you know, something that's different, just read these two articles online or in your print issue. The first one, God's Space Program, and then this one, The Moon Mission and the Overview Effect.
And as is these articles advertise as well, we have our whole booklet, Our Awesome Universe Potential. I mean, you mentioned the incredible human potential that shows from the Bible what your potential is, and then Our Awesome Universe Potential is a great follow-up with that that tries to really bring that to life with some of the latest pictures and science, as well as those scriptures. So just two wonderful and inspiring booklets there. And I think, you know, that overview, the overview effect, that's what then prepares us. I mean, that's the critical background for the rest of the magazine. I mean, the very next article is Reviving the Dark Ages, which, I mean, you look at some of the history covered in this article and, you know, it is bleak. Dark Ages, Europe. I mean, as this article brings out, Dark Ages can mean different things to, or has meant different things at different times. And Mr. Fleury kind of defines what he's mentioning. But, you know, I would pick the 30 Years' War as being one of the absolute low points in European history, if not human history. Like, probably the experience during the 30 Years' War would be worse than World War I or World War II. You had states within Germany losing 30%, even 50% of their population. There were credible reports of just the number of people in some regions had gotten so low that then just wolves and wild animals were out of control. You had armies coming in, eating all the food. So then all the civilians for hundreds of miles would just die of starvation. But then, well, they start hiding their food, which means that armies start torturing people to try and find out where their food is. And then there's a whole religious element in this as well of Catholic versus Protestant. And so people start, the torture becomes, well, we as well in kind of inquisitions and convert or repent. And it's just a brutal, brutal time period. And this article talks about that. And while it says this horrific story is not yet complete, 90% of God's prophecy is being fulfilled in this end times. So the darkest part of the Dark Ages is just now beginning to develop. And I think if you really think about what this article is talking about, it's one of the most sobering pictures that we've seen of just trumpet articles. And we didn't plan it this way, but I think it's inspired that you have the overview and the wonderful good news and the where this is leading before this article that is also very necessary, that says, well, wake up. This is where the world is heading right now. And you look at the way that Europe, the way that the Catholic Church is behaving, is talking. You see this particularly with what they're talking about, what they're getting at with Israel and attack on Jews. This is what is coming back.
Yeah, it's a stark contrast. I mean, you're going from, you know, high tech and almost futuristic type of thinking and uplifting thinking into some of the, like you said, just some of the bloodiest, darkest, muddiest parts of the past. And amazingly, it's within Christianity. And so it's, you know, both sides are Christian in these conflicts, and you know, one is claiming to, you know, basically be God, you know, spreading God's kingdom all over the earth, if I can put it that way, and doing these horrible things, and not just the violence, which can't even be, you know, captured in words, but the deception and the blending of God, of this God who created the earth, who renewed the surface of the earth in 6 days and rested on the seventh day, who made the stars and made the moon, which is an extraordinarily obviously intentionally created object, and they're blending that with some of the worst suffering and deceit and violence and power hungriness and slaughter of and extermination of the truth, which is as tragic as extermination of human beings in one sense, in a strong sense. So it just really plunges me into the ugliness of humanity, even humanity with the Bible, with the New Testament, with Christianity. And that's not a bad thing. That's because it's real, and like you said, it's going to happen again. The significance of this article to me is that, and it's that it shows there's clearly something wrong with Christianity. You can't just, you know, I have the Bible and I can read it and I can join a church of my choice or the church that my parents went to or whatever, and I will be right with God. There's clearly, you know, and Christ said in the Bible that there'd be false Christ, there'd be false, you know, there'd be, you know, and so the, you know, positivity toward Christianity or believing that there's a creator or believing in Jesus Christ, as we've said before, is not enough. You know, you can end up in just horrific, suffering horrific things, committing horrific things, even with all of that in place. And Jesus Christ specifically said that, like he specifically prophesied, in fact, empires, this Holy Roman Empire, as Mr. Flory's been warning about for decades, and Mr. Herbert Armstrong before him. What might surprise people though is how specific it is about these false churches, these destructive powers, where they are, and what they will specifically do, how many times they will kind of reemerge in world history, and how much you can know. You don't just generally know that there's false Christianity. You just don't generally know, you know, but you can specifically know that there are going to be seven resurrections of this entity. And you can know when the sixth one was, so you can know when to look for the seventh one. And I think Mr. Flory just does a powerful job in this fairly, you know, brief article showing that those things and that this evil mixed with good, this Christianity mixed with evil, mixed with power grabbing, mixed with the worst aspects of humanity, is relevant. It's in the Bible. So in that sense, the Bible accounts for these horrible things, and it also says there's hope. So that kind of, like you said before, puts everything in perspective.
So this article, it draws off some recent comments, or well, some recent, some not so recent, from Catholic bishops, from people like Cardinal Pier Battista Pizzaballa, the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, and you have had comments from some of these different archbishops and cardinals that come right out of the Middle Ages, and even Pizzaballa condemning Christian Zionism as heresy. You know, talk from the Catholic Church basically saying the Jews have no right to live in Judea, you know, in the land that was theirs, and really some when you stop and think about what they're saying, some pretty pretty shocking words, you know, basically claiming that the church alone has the rights, the Catholic Church alone, to Jerusalem, to the Holy Land. And you know, Mr. Floyd draws the connection between, well, this is the way that they were talking during the Dark Ages. This is a belief system that directly led to a lot of these wars of religion, this kind of universalist and exclusivist thinking. And so he goes through some of that history. But the next article follows up with the Vatican's endgame in Jerusalem. We do have, again, a few articles tied together here that talk about what is going on. And this talks about the way that people like Pizzaballo and various other cardinals, this one is by Andrew Miller, have really used the tension that comes from the Iran war. And I thought it was just so interesting to watch that you've got Iranian missiles dropping out of the sky or being intercepted and sometimes not being intercepted, but these missiles are being aimed right at these holiest sites, or not just holy sites, sacred sites in central Jerusalem. So the Jewish authorities say, well, we don't want a mass casualty event. We don't want even shrapnel kind of falling on top of a massive group of people while they're worshiping. We're going to close the sites. We're going to close them for Jews. We're going to close them for Muslims. We're going to close them for Christians. And for the Muslims, this was a huge deal to have the Al-Aqsa Mosque. I think it was the first time since the Six-Day War that the Al-Aqsa Mosque had been closed for Ramadan and for the end of Ramadan. And yet, it barely caused a ripple. It didn't cause any problems. The one that kind of blew this up into being a big deal was the Catholic Church and Pizzaballo. And because they have had this agenda of, we want control of these sites in Jerusalem. We want control of Jerusalem. And it was an opportunity for them to make the Jewish control and the current status quo look bad. So they jumped on this. They made it sound like they were being kind of targeted, singled out, rather than the same rule being applied to everyone. So you know, Andrew again kind of builds off this in the same way that Mr. Flurry did in his article, and just gives the overview that a lot of people aren't aware of what the Catholic Church currently teaches about the state of Jerusalem, about you know, how slow they've even been to recognize the state of Israel right now, and their pretty horrendous relationship with the state of Israel because of their own imperialist ambitions in this part of the world. And he builds on a lot of this by quoting Catholic sources. It's not fringe ideas. It's, well, this is what the Catholic Church says and teaches. This is what this pope has said, or this bishop. They don't necessarily get masses of press attention, but this is undeniably their teaching. And so, again, he goes in and draws logical conclusions based on that, and then shows how this ties right in with Bible prophecy. There are prophecies about this Catholic-led empire rising in Europe that's going to bring Europe to the Dark Ages, setting up their capital in Jerusalem, fighting for control of Jerusalem. And we're going to see a revival of the Crusades. And that's what both of these articles really point to.
Right. And this one, as you said, a lot more of the news and the history specifics of the history and what's going on now. And like you said, you said it well, they used the situation, right? They used this. You can tell they intentionally made a big deal out of this and pitted themselves against the Jewish authorities. Right now and in the past, that's kind of, we can kind of look at that as, oh, interesting kind of, you know, theological tussle, you know, diplomatic back and forth maybe, and then it settles down and doesn't matter. It does, and it's going to matter a lot when the Catholic Church gets power, when it has a lot more power than these. It's these same beliefs, it's these same teachings, it's these same quotes from the past that they're going to use with a lot more power and force in the future. So it's, you're getting an advanced look at their reasoning and their goals by going through this history. You know, Andrew Miller will come in and to my office sometimes and talk about you know, some sort of thing that happened, you know, the 1099, you know, campaign to, you know, that happened in this city. And, you know, it's not that it's not interesting, but it's just, we're very, most of us are very disconnected from that. We don't have a lot of context for the Catholic, teachings and their campaigns, as Mr. Fuller says, they're Catholic crusades, not Christian crusades. But that is becoming more like every time he writes about it or we write about it in the Trumpet, it's more relevant and it's more familiar and it makes more sense and it's more topical than it was the previous issue. And we're going to see that more and more and more. You know, you're going to see the importance of the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem. You know, I think you're going to see that a lot more. That's going to become a household term, if I can say it that way. We're heading in that direction where the machinations of the Vatican and the papacy and the various cardinals and patriarchs and so forth are going to matter more, and they're going to move the needle more. And you see them, I think, confident in their power enough already to start trying to, you know, make things happen. I mean, that the previous article, Mr. Fleury's, and this one, the Vatican's endgame in Jerusalem, just show absolutely that this is a political power, always has been, this entity. It's a beastly political power. You know, if you believe in Catholicism, you believe it's God's political power. But it's definitely done a lot of, you know, dealing and persecution of Jews, like Mr. Fleury, you know, says there, and teaching that if you are a Christian and you believe that the Jews have a right to the Holy Land, then according to the Catholic Church, you are a heretic. These are real world things. And I think as everybody has kind of focused on other issues, they've kind of seemed to be side issues, but they're going to be more and more central to not just theologians, but or even, you know, the faithful, so to speak, but to geopolitics.
And the next article in here, well, this one's my article, but it still builds on more different comments from the Pope that also relate to the Iran war. Without NATO, Europe will erupt, where we have had the Pope play a pretty key role in this divide between Europe and the United States. Now, it's not the only role, and I think, you know, this is Donald Trump himself caused a lot of this divide over what happened in Greenland. And then, though, the way that Europe has responded to this Iran war has been very divisive, and that there were bases, airspace, things that America really had, a right to expect to be able to use in shutting down a threat to both the United States and to Europe that were denied, that have really done a mortal blow to NATO. And this is a pretty massive long-term consequence of, I mean, to say it's a consequence of the war, I think misstates cause and effect, really. It's Europe's response to it that has caused this. But it's one of the long-term ramifications of what has gone on over the last couple of months.
Yeah, NATO is about to erupt. That's a good title. Did you know that we had a picture of a U.S.-Italian airbase with a volcano in the background when you chose that title? Because it was just burning.
Well, I didn't, but I did have this story in mind when that airbase with American troops was used to try and stop a volcanic eruption from destroying a village. So I'm not surprised that there's pictures of that. I hadn't, before working on this article, I had kind of no idea. I was just reading up on the history of this particular airbase in Sicily that Italy had denied America use of for this Iran war. And I was like, okay, well, what has Italy gained from this airbase in the past? So I was going over and reading, well, this is when it was founded and used for submarine patrols or naval patrols across the Mediterranean. And then I get this story about how there was this operation to fight a volcano. And it was kind of like, all right, there's my introduction. Like, Italy did get a lot from this this air base, the U.S. Marine Corps literally went to war with a volcano, and they saved. It wasn't a massive village, but you had this massive effort to just save this small Italian village. They were airlifting in massive concrete blocks to redirect the flow of lava. And the Italian military as well did some pretty impressive things on the ground, digging channels to send the lava down and things like that. I got sidetracked quite a lot with this particular story. But I thought it was a powerful picture of what NATO has done for Europe. And then when the United States... why it's so significant that when the United States wants something, and really wants something for the benefit of Europe too, that Europe says, no, we're not helping. Why I think America and Donald Trump is kind of outright to be outraged at that, and why this inevitably will lead to a split.
Yeah, and a major split. I mean, we're talking about, you know, some of the recent news with the Pope, or with, you know, divisions between Italy and, you know, them not allowing, you know, use of the base or airspace or... and these are major problems, but I think the danger is you could think, oh, well, you know, these kind of things happened before and it'll all kind of settle back down. I mean, NATO is basically permanent and it'll kind of morph over time, but, you know, it's the thing, the entire, you know, globe is kind of split between NATO and, you know, not NATO, NATO and Russia. And, but like you have said in this article and powerfully in other articles prior to this, NATO itself, the kind of the defensive, the balance of power between two hemispheres almost, that's about to blow up. And it's been a problem for a while. I remember President Trump's just, it's hard to tell just from his rhetoric, but he's been complaining about NATO for as long, I think as long as he's, I think in his first term and maybe in his first campaign, from memory, I might be wrong about that, but... but he's just kind of always said, like, NATO's not paying enough, NATO's not doing enough, you know, our European allies in NATO. I think I want to just, like, leave. And that's something no one would say. We have busted through so many barriers, so many things that people would never say before, never do publicly. We're just, like, plowing through those one after another. And we're getting to the point, like, it will actually, I mean, they'll find some way to make it kind of gradual, I think, but it's breaking. The structure, the strategic structure of the West and the East is breaking apart. Even the balance of powers and the opportunities arising for conquest and so forth are changing. And so it's interesting to see the Pope be a part of that. The Vatican is right in there, but. My thing would just be to say that Greenland was a really good example of the problems between the United States and Europe over NATO, but it was just kind of, it didn't start with Greenland and it didn't start with that rhetoric, right? Like I've been saying, and I haven't really found the answer to this, but why did President Trump make a big deal out of it in the first place? I think it's a continuation of his past criticisms of Europe in NATO, that they're not reliable. I don't trust them to do what needs to be done, or even to allow the United States to do what needs to be done if we actually have a conflict and we need Greenland or Sigonella or wherever. And so that distrust and that threat to leave and, you know, has been building. And so this massive alliance that you think is permanent is already breaking apart, and like you said, when it's gone, you know, President Trump and a lot of people think, well, that good riddance, you know, what a relief. But that just will, like you say, you know, a new volcano will erupt, and that doesn't mean that NATO will just implode or suffer badly. It means that they will pour lava on their enemies and work independently of the United States. So, I mean, this is full of really good news kind of making that point, but it's really just kind of a snapshot of where we are in this breakdown of NATO. Not, you know, this is suddenly happening that just started within the past, you know, year or two. It's a major, major part of human existence on this in this generation, and it's been going away, and this is yet another like earthquake, if you want to call it that, where there's going to be a day where it's like NATO effectively, if not completely, is gone, and we've got a completely new calculus for the balancing of power and who can fight who and who can gain what by uniting and who can, you know, gain what by destroying what used to be an ally.
And the other thing I just found kind of amusing in looking at this article is to see all of these groups that jumped on the MAGA bandwagon after Donald Trump was reelected now turning on him. These groups, like the Alternative for Deutschland, is the most notorious in Germany, but all of these different groups that you've seen Elon Musk and others champion, that, you know, we've been watching these for years, and it was like they start jumping on the Trump train and you're like, really? Like, you guys regularly give speeches about how evil the Americans are, about how American dominance and NATO are the cause of all of the world problems, and now you're getting behind Donald Trump. Like, this seems like a bit of an odd position for you to be in. And they did kind of tamp down on some of the anti-Americanism for a few months, and then to see that kind of erupt back, and they're all off the Trump train now, and they're all kind of back to America is the root of all evil. And I mean, it was all so obviously insincere, and it says something pretty worrying about the foreign policy wing of the kind of the MAGA movement, that they were so quick to embrace these guys without doing any kind of check of, well, what were you saying 5 minutes ago? But these are all, and this is I think also ties in with what the Pope's been saying, because a lot of these groups are very Catholic. So you start having a bust up with the Pope, you're going to lose them very quickly. I think Giorgia Meloni probably seemed like she had more of a sincere relationship with President Trump. But again, you know, you start insulting the Pope and you're going to lose the Italian prime minister. You have to. Not just as her country massively Catholic. I mean, she is the leader of the successor party to Mussolini's fascists that came to power doing a deal with the Vatican. Like, this is a core part of who they are. So that wedge is really an important wedge to make, and has quite widespread ramifications. And, you know, then this is where just, you know, I was kind of thinking about this story, and we started with the volcano, and the Bible talks about Europe as a boiling pot. And you kind of alluded to this with someone you were saying about lava spilling out. Like, it is a simmering cauldron of discontent. I mean, that's kind of a cliche, but that's also pretty much right from the terminology of Jeremiah chapter 1. I mean, maybe that's the root even of that English expression, that there is simmering anger against the United States. And so, you know, this is wrecking NATO like this. I mean, there's a deliberate agenda there. And it's preparing Europe then to be able to boil over. I think a lot of people rightly in Europe are saying, well, look, if we're going to not have America to defend us anymore, we need to come together. And I think they're right. But I think that's a big part of it. The people that want a European superstate are the ones that have been deliberately breaking this relationship with the United States to help push that superstate forwards. So, you know, Donald Trump is all on board with and encouraging the rise of a European superstate because it will make a more powerful Europe. And Europe right now is an ally of the United States. So more powerful Europe, good for America. That's kind of the thinking. You look at what's happening, though, and the more powerful Europe becomes, the more anti-American it becomes. And it's a power working to find a way to break away from the United States. So that divide in NATO, that's one major ramification of what we've seen happening with the Iran war. The Battle for Hormuz by Mr. Abraham Blondeau talks about another, where, you know, we've talked about on this show, like sea gates, naval passages. We've had so much to say on those at the trumpet because of Bible prophecy. And we probably talk as a proportion, talk about that a lot more than most other news articles or news organizations until the last couple of months or so, when sea gates and ocean passages are everywhere now, because so much of Iran's leverage hinges on just one sea gate. And then that's got lots of people looking at other sea gates. So this looks at this article, The Battle of Hormuz, looks at the battle over the Strait of Hormuz and makes comparisons with the Suez Crisis, another battle over a different choke point that ended up demonstrating Britain's weakness, demonstrating that, okay, Britain might look quite powerful on paper and was a victor in World War II, but a lot of that power is gone. And it was a, you know, that was one event. There was a trend of long-term decline before that. But that one Suez Crisis caused a lot of people to wake up the next day and say, oh, Britain is a whole lot weaker than we thought they were. And it was a massive, a date of kind of massive collapse of British power. And this article asks the question, well, is what we're seeing over Hormuz, is this America's Suez Crisis?
Right. It was a great comparison to make. It that wasn't on my radar at all. I mean, I had heard of the Suez Crisis. I knew that it was a, you know, kind of a death knell for actual British power. There's also the shameful, well, I don't know all the details, but it sure seems like a shameful betrayal, if I can use that word, by the United States to not support Britain in that. I don't know what the reasoning was there. But this is a very apt comparison. It's quite good. It was good to get into it more and research more about it. But it just kind of gives you that history of Suez and Egypt's, you know, kind of bleeding of Britain and Israel, even though Britain and Israel really won the war on the ground and could have had control of it, but they did need the United States support at least, you know, and there was also the economic right threat. All these things are connected so often. It seems like, well, why don't they just, you know, it's easy to, as a, you know, person just like sitting back and watching, like, oh, they should just do this. But there are many things connected. There are many ways to attack an enemy. And the British currency, the British economy were threatened. And so I think this is a good example. And in the same way that empowering Europe or not empower, like keep them in NATO or make them pay more or make them just break away from, you know, there's kind of this quandary, like if you do this, well, but then there's this. And if you do that, well, then there's this. Same thing with Suez and with Hormuz. I hope people don't come away from the previous article and this article thinking, well, if they would just make this geopolitical decision instead of that geopolitical decision, you know, if they, you know, that's not the point. The point is that when you have turned away from God and you are, I mean, in the Bible, he talks about that as like a protector, like a husband relationship, almost like you are my nation and I will protect you. And if you turn away from that and you're like, well, I'll do deals with other nations and take care of my own security and build up my military or ally with another nation that has a big military. And I will turn my back on the Creator God of Israel, which the United States and Britain and Israel descended from. The Bible talks about that like harlotry, as harlotry. And so this isn't about coming up with a better strategy. the literal geopolitical strategy, the literal security strategy, energy strategy, will fail if we don't address the fundamental cause. And the Bible shows, I mean, you cite Germany's secret strategy to destroy Iran. There's so much detail in the Bible showing what's happening here. But again, those prophecies about Germany being a whirlwind and Germany having plans for the Middle East and the importance of sea gates and how God gave sea gates and then he took them away. That's all coming out of the same Bible that tells you how to, you know, treat your wife and how to treat your children and how to have a relationship with your God. And so as these prophecies that you're citing in these articles are happening, and Mr. Blondo are happening, that's proving the Bible. And it's not a policy recommendation for the inverse. It's a proof of the Bible, and it shows that the Bible's right about these power blocks. And it's right about, you know, what they're going to do to each other. And in this case, we have like this historical precedent as well to just show us what's coming for America. And the parallels are really pretty stunning there.
And I think that point that you made about, it's not about a different strategy, or if we rely on our own strategy and our own thinking, though, it will come unstuck at some point. You know, we're not going to always be able to perfectly find a perfect solution to everything, and we're going to make mistakes, and sometimes there won't be a solution, and there, you know, the only response the only safety is a miracle. Well, and the next article, will Iran sink the petrodollar? I mean, this is about a deliberate strategy from the United States that is kind of running out of road. Like, okay, we'll move off the gold standard, but we still want people to buy dollars. One way of doing that is we'll have the trade in oil be in dollars, and we've got a mutually beneficial arrangement we can come up with Saudi Arabia. We'll keep the world, we'll keep you free, and we'll keep the trading lanes around you free so that you can trade dollars. And the quid pro, I mean, you can trade oil and you'll be able to get wealth from doing that. And the quid pro quo is, well, we want you to do that trade in dollars. And, you know, from Iran's perspective at this time, America, overwhelmingly the world's biggest economy, you know, dollars, they're probably empirically anyway, the best currency that they could pick to do that trade in. So this makes sense. They start trading in dollars. So when you have the Hormuz is shut, and America is either unable or unwilling to open it. And I mean, we still don't know exactly how this is going to end. Potentially, America is self-sufficient in oil. Like, there's a possibility that America just walks away and says, we're done in Iran, the middle. Like, everyone else, you sort it out. But a big, important thing we've got to understand, America's got to understand if it's making that decision, is... Well, people, you like, this is, that's reneging on this deal. That's reneging on this fundamental bargain. This has massive economic consequences. There's a lot, like, there's still reasons for countries to buy the dollar, even outside of oil. You know, there's a treasury bond market, a debt market that is bigger than just about anywhere else. That this debt is really high, but at the same time, America doesn't have a history of defaulting on its debt and reneging on its debt. So, And I think until the dam breaks, people are pretty confident that that their money will be paid back. Oh, interesting. It looks like we've got a thunderstorm going on around here. So there's still reasons for them to be using the dollar. But you renege on that kind of arrangement, there are consequences for that. And it can be one more in a whole host of reasons to start moving away from the dollar and to start looking at the Chinese yuan or the euro or some of these other currencies. So here is just different geopolitical, geoeconomic strategies to try and underpin America's dominance, but they risk all coming unstuck here.
Right. And this is a good example of the interconnected nature of both American power and American vulnerability, the interconnected nature of every nation's power and every nation's vulnerability that isn't relying on God for its protection, for its wealth, for its safety. We were just talking about how, Britain was, they didn't have the petrodollar, but they had, you know, an economic system that was beneficial with their currency. That relied on international, on other nations doing certain things, and, you know, a certain understanding or a certain way of doing things. And this is why the geopolitics or the world news seem confusing sometimes. It's like, well, you have a nuclear aircraft carrier. You have you can do whatever you want. You know, you can hold the whole world at gunpoint if it's literally like, do this or we'll nuke you. If that's a fulfillment of if you're obeying God in doing that, then yes, that'll work. If you're not, if you're relying on the actual nuclear warhead, you're relying on the actual economic arrangement, you're relying on other nations to continue doing things that you want them to do, either by force or by naivety or by mutual benefit, then yeah, things are going to come unstuck. Like you said, like Saudi Arabia, as soon as there's another better, you know, situation for it, pricing its oil or shipping its oil, which is a major, major thing. So it's not a decision they make lightly. It's not something they can turn on a dime. But when all those factors, or just a majority of those factors, line up to, you know, not using the dollar or not buying American military hardware, or, you know, they run out of oil and now they've got to have some other strategy where they're, you know, they really care about, you know, windmills or, you know, something totally different. You're subjecting yourself to that when you make those decisions, like as a nation, you know, over our history. It's not just an administration, but like as a nation, when you're not trusting God, you're not relying on God, you're not obeying God, then you are relying on this nation to do this and that nation to do that, and me threatening this way and kind of holding the carrot over here and the stick over here and so forth. And so those, you know, those things are going to eventually run out just naturally. But if you're being cursed, they're going to run out catastrophically. In the case of, you know, Israel, then that's the modern nations of Israel. That is what we're happening. We've relied on these things instead of God, and they're going away. And we're suffering the consequences, and we can only blame ourselves.
And that article finishes by pointing to another of our books, Solve Your Money Troubles, The Dollar Will Fall, Are You Ready? And the Bible does have specific promises about, I mean, all these promises, all these prophecies, they all tie together as well. And, you know, it talks about the sea gates being seized. It talks specifically about Europe being the one that confronts Iran. So America's going to lose control of those sea gates. There's economic crisis, besiegement prophesied, and, you know, ultimately the most important, the critical response is repentance, is turning to God, is you know, building faith now. And you know, faith comes from hearing, and hearing from the word of God, digging into your Bible, understanding God's plan for mankind, drawing close to him. So we have that faith to be protected, but there are also faith-based decisions we can make with our finances, or wise decisions can make with our finances. There's kind of a practical component to that this book, Solve Your Money Troubles, talks about. And it is a very practical book. It gets into budgeting and all kinds of various different related practical ways to implement God's law. And it gets back to planting the heavens, even, and what is God teaching? God is teaching mankind how to use resources, how to manage resources. That's part of your astronaut training. So that book is a very useful, practical tool. Well, I think we have a couple of articles, well, an infographic and an article by Jeremiah Jacques that are different subject, critically important. I was writing up something for our morning brief the other day that you mentioned earlier. We're seeing so many stories these days about the negative impacts of social media, particularly on young people. And I was surprised to find that we hadn't really written an article like straight up on this for some time. We had articles about, you know, more kind of narrowly focused. This study just came out that found this specific thing, but just a kind of a general, well, here are the dangers of social media. I think we were overdue for something on that. We had things on it 10, 15 years ago when social media first started to be a thing. You know, we were definitely on top of warning about this. But you know, sometimes I think we like, oh, everyone knows this, when there's still a need to sound a warning. So Jeremiah does that with this infographic that goes through, well, the title of the infographic, Social Media Destroys Young Minds, and talks, it shows their social deprivation, their addictiveness, attention fragmentation, sleep deprivation. And then to go with that, a more positive article, The Quiet Gains of Logging Off. And, you know, okay, negative mental health, to use the trendy term, can be associated with social media use, but logging off has practical benefits as well.
Yeah, it is good to look at this now that this is, like you said, this is established. This is just like a regular part of life for so many, for almost everyone, honestly. And the thing, I mean, I'll just say the thing that sort of stood out to me over the past few months or a couple of years is governments outlawing social media use for minors or for children. I was really surprised. I thought, you know, the governments allow so much, so many horrible things, and they've been trending to allow even more horrible things, even more mind-destroying things. So to me, that was a signal of how dangerous this is for children. If governments that allow you to do all kinds of things, I'm talking about Western governments, Australia, United States, Canada, you know, different U.S. states. If they're concerned about it, not at all of those that I just mentioned have passed laws banning, but some countries have passed laws banning, you know, use of social media for children. It's got it. They have to be seeing real, documented bad results from that. These are the same governments that let, you know, at least in the U.S. example, you know, they let the alcohol stores stay open as essential businesses during COVID. Right? These are craven human governments, and they'll allow all kinds of horrible things to happen, and put some sort of nice name on it. You know, they call murdering children in the womb, you know, what do they call it? Like reproductive health. Like, but they're the they'll ban social media use. That doesn't necessarily show that they're wise and right in doing so. I think it just shows that there really are bad, dangerous, documented results from social media use, and those things, those phones, putting one of those in the hands of your child is a seriously dangerous thing. I mean, think of it as like putting a handgun in the hand of your child. I mean, maybe something bad won't happen, but unlikely.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm a little skeptical, I guess, of some of the government social media bans for exactly the reason that you say. Look at all the things that they have allowed that I think it is, like, I think it's genuinely bad, but I also think there's an agenda there in, well, we're going to say you can use social media if you're over 18. Now you have to prove to us that you're over 18. The only way you can do that is to have some kind of online ID, and now we know the ID of everybody that's browsing the internet, and it's a massive attack on anonymity online by the back door after voters have consistently rejected any kind of digital ID. And it is so pernicious because you're like, yeah, well, this is necessary. We do need to get our kids off this. Like, which of these extremes is the le like which of these is the lesser of the two evils? I don't know. But that's what's going on here. But I've came across this a lot when I was writing the video games article for a previous Trumpet Print. I think in a lot of ways, these are two sides of the same coin. That the social media, like even the different graphs, kind of make clear. I think social media is a trap for boys, but has hit girls harder. It's something that has addicted them more and has hurt them more. And I think it's been a power, like it's been such a negative kind of peer pressure of making behaviors that were once pretty extreme seem normal, and now they are normal. Like just kind of depraved behavior. But I think even to the point that like sharing nude photographs for a generation is a normal part of dating. Like that, I think is kind of been through this cycle where it was weird and bizarre and unusual. Social media and dating sites created a perception that this was normal, and then it became normal. And I think it's done similar things for girls. Like you've almost got now a pipeline, I think, from social media to OnlyFans, like where people get trained or get used to sharing things for likes, for validation, sharing pictures of themselves, and then they will get targeted. by people saying, hey, you know, you can make money from doing this, and it's not really that different from what you're doing right now. And so it's been destructive. I don't want to, like, I face the same dilemma with video games, because I think video games have been destructive for a lot of young women. But it's been much more massively destructive for men, and that I think has kind of hooked the male brain more, and it's tied into a simulated artificial sense of great accomplishment without the great effort that normally is required for great accomplishment. And I think that has hooked into male drivers more. And I think social media creates the artificial sense of great popularity and has hooked into the female brain more. And I think it'd be dangerous to say, well, I'm a guy, so social media is fine for me, or I'm not vulnerable to the dangers. And I think it would be the same to say or I've got a daughter, so I don't need to worry about video game. Like, there is enough crossover there that there are dangers. But still, I think it's kind of a mirror image, and it's something that has hit young women more. So
yeah, I'll just add to that. Mm-hmm. On the infographic, I actually hadn't read this before it got published, but Jeremiah does a good job, doesn't he, of getting to the core of, like, Instagram. Comparison lies at the heart of Instagram. What you were just saying, right? Like, he just, I'm noticing that he just, like, says the essence of this app is this. And it's a really good encapsulation. I was just noticing that. But also, as you were talking there, I was just thinking about your point about training, right? Like, is this what we want to take to the moon? Is this what we want to take to the stars? You know, why would we even go? As that administrator said, like, are we going to take the suffering and the self-harm, even just the wastage of time of, you know, what are you doing? I'm editing a video of myself that's useless to anybody for any reason. Is that what we're going to spread through the heavens? You know, we spread it across the earth. No, we need to train ourselves we need to receive the training from our creator of what is good to do and what is bad to do and what seems good to do but is bad. And this is a good example of that, because I wanted to just say, if the viewer, like, says, okay, I'm going to, you know, that's right, I'm going to take away my kid's smartphone, or I'm not going to give him a smartphone, or I'm going to, you know, get rid of my smartphone and just get a regular cell phone. Be prepared for a battle. Be prepared for hard training. It is hard to get rid of those things. Society expects you to have them, even to the point of, like, you know, verifying stuff at work and so forth. So it's a battle, but you've got to realize how worth the fight the battle is. And I really encourage you to get rid of the cell phones, like that's talking about. And then, like you said, the quiet gains of logging off article sort of says some people have done it. It is possible. They are happier for having done it. And many of us, you know, at the Trumpet have had a similar, you know, thing where we've, you know, dumbed the smartphone or gotten a flip phone or whatever. And it's a struggle, but it's worth the struggle.
Yeah. And these are great little pithy articles, like you say, very information dense. And I think, though, that is, like, the points you made, like, I grappled with this with video games, where I think you can describe some of the most extreme games and the most extreme effects. And I think they need to be exposed. But then that's very easy for the response to that be like, oh, well, mine is fine because I'm not close to that. And I think, you know, talking about, say, some of the most extreme effects of social media, or, like, you know, the Instagram to OnlyFans pipeline, you know, that does need to be exposed. But at the same time, it can be easy to be like, well, I'm nowhere near that. Okay, maybe I waste a bit of time there, and maybe I spend a little too much time scrolling to see, well, what interesting video is going to come up next, or interesting post. But I'm a million miles away from, and that may be absolutely true. But, like you say, one of the biggest consequences of this that affects everyone is the time, or the sapping of self-discipline and the inability to concentrate. Like, these are fairly intangible. I think they're still measurable, and Jeremiah does a good job of putting a lot of statistics in here. But very real harms done by social media. And the next article in here, this gets to kind of physical physical diet. I mean, it asks a question and answers. Sometimes you get articles that just ask the question and don't answer it. But one that I've had a lot, why does everybody have allergies now? From Jörg Mardian, who writes a lot of our health articles for us. I mean, we've all seen this, that this is, it's trendy. You know, social media is trendy. Having allergies is trendy. Now, I think it's definitely not the case of just people are making things up. It, like this talks about, there are real concrete reasons why you have allergies like being a lot more common. He talks about use of antibiotics, the kind of modern lifestyles. But I mean, as the final subhead even says, a systemic failure, that this is a result, this is tangible evidence of multiple failures in how we live our lives. And it's, you know, it's something that is a very noticeable symptom.
Yeah. Just touching on it briefly. I mean, that's, you know, so many things are becoming normal. Like you were just saying, you know, it's normal, apparently even trendy to have some weird allergy that nobody else has, or you're part of the group that has these allergies, and they're real things. And, you know, and it just changes people's lives. I still remember an article I read about a girl who died from, you know, a certain, you know, she'd always been so careful not to have, you know, what, peanuts or whatever it was. And she had these M&Ms that she hadn't seen before. And then she thought, you know, she always thought about it. So she thought, okay, does that have peanut? No. And then her friend gave her one, she had one. And then they, you know, turned the package over or whatever, and it had just a tiny bit in it, you know, and she died, you know. And I can remember reading about that. Again, that's a, you know, one of the more extreme examples, but so many people, you know, skin problems and, you know, all types of allergies, not just like sneezing in the springtime, but, you know, all kinds of allergies. And like you just got straight to the heart of it, this is a problem with our society. Like we are doing this to ourselves. These are decisions that have been made. So I'd recommend you go to thetrumpet.com and type in J-O-R-G for his first name, Jörg Mardian. And then it's all, you know, all of his articles will come up, and you can just seem to scroll through that and just see how proof that human beings do not know how to live without training from God. We're just destroying ourselves physically. We don't destroy ourselves with weapons and terror, and, you know, we will destroy ourselves with these chemicals and these pollutions and these bad lifestyles and these poisons that we eat and so forth. So this is just a good reminder of that. And I really think, you know, an article that made me realize just some of the points in this article was one you talked about a long time ago about kind of like the environmental poisons. Like you gave the example of the how baby mattresses have to have a fireproof coating on them, you know, and just how we are killing, like we as a nation, but as a society, as human beings, we are literally like killing ourselves with poisons. And that's another witness to us that we need that training from our creator. We need to submit to that to even know how to live.
You're living dangerously bringing that up. Oh, that story just really, like fireproof furniture. Yeah. It is so like firefighters do not want it, because when it does burn, it means it burns with all kinds of chemicals. There's no scientific evidence that it does any good. There's no evidence of it safe. The only reason fire-resistant furniture exists is because a bunch of chemical companies had a bunch of excess chemicals that were created by other processes, and they lobbied governments to mandate fire-resistant furniture. It doesn't help anyone other than those chemical companies. It has harmed millions. And that's just one tiny example. And yeah, like how many things are there like this in our world that's just messed up? And so, yeah, these are the things we need to get right on Earth if we're going to go out and plant the heavens. And it's it's a small, well, it's one thing, fire-resistant furniture, but it points to just massive systemic problems, you know, that we will cause massive harm just to benefit businesses that have the money to twist the system. And I think you kind of see that with social media as well, and the lobbying that goes on there, and the you know, all these tech executives, they're with Donald Trump in China as we record this, and they're pretty, I mean, I don't know whether Zuckerberg is one of them, but you know, Tim Cook and Elon Musk, I guess he's a social media titan, not clamping down on free speech at least, but still there are dangers that come with Twitter use as well. So, you know, these are the wealthy and the powerful are able to twist laws to do them great harms or to do great harm to the world. Well, and the next article is something that is kind of a bit out of left field, and now for something completely different. I love the illustration that they did here. The title is "Should You Paint Jesus?" And so the illustration the art department came up with is a very Eastern looking icon with a paintbrush, and tries to answer or ask the question, well, is it okay to have a crucifix, to have a picture of Jesus Christ or, you know, baby Jesus or however it is? This is something that is common in the world. But, you know, like we were saying when we talked about the Catholic Church, we don't want to take men's ideas for it. We want to hold it up and compare it with, well, what does the Bible say? And so that's what this article does for this common practice.
Yeah. And I'm assuming that he's got his eyebrow raised there. It's a good illustration. Like he's considering whether he should put the brush to the canvas or not. So that's not Jesus being depicted there. That's a religious figure deciding whether to paint the Son of God. And I think, again, this is one of those things where you might think, well, it's more of a religious thing, and we've always done it this way, or we've always done it that way, or whatever. But if you get back to, you know, the Creator God, I mean, the way I've said it is maybe not the best, but it's like he's the main character, and we are the little beings that last just a little bit of time. And so how he commands us to worship him, how he commands us to depict or not depict him is really important. And that, because that's our relationship with him, it affects our relationship with him. And we, I think many of us are used to just making decisions about our relationship with the Creator based on just what we feel like or what we've always done, or, you know, and that's, we can't do that. It's got to be from his word. If he's covered it in his word and he's telling us, then ignoring that or just, you know, going against it, rebelling against it because you're more comfortable doing it a different way, but that just directly affects your relationship with the Creator, and your relationship with God is your only hope. You know, it's mankind's only hope. So this really goes through, and I know Mihailo Zekic, he worked on this a couple times, like just really kind of went through this a couple times, and he had some personal experience that he was drawing from, and just so it really came from a good place. Just really he felt it was a needed article, and you know, Mr. Hilliker agreed. And he does go through it. It's very clear. And I think that, you know, if you're someone who, you know, might be used to using iconography or feel like, you know, wearing the cross necklace is a, you know, a brave act of showing that you are, you know, believe in Jesus Christ or the Son of God, it shows you what the Bible itself says about that. And so, you know, not to say that we're, you know, for a lot of people, especially in this country, you know, wearing that cross necklace is it does take some courage to do that. It, you know, but does that alone mean that you should do it? Or is that good mixed with evil? So this really, I think we'll just walk you through the Bible and sort of introduce you to looking at this maybe a different way than you're used to. And then bring you just that little bit, as you prove it from the Bible, not just from this article, but as you prove it from the Bible, as continue and deepen your relationship with your Creator, then this might, or this will remove perhaps a barrier that might be between you and your God.
Good point. Well, We've got a, there are a few other articles in the Trumpet print. Wage Your War on Sin in Your Life from Mr. Hilliker. The Bundeswehr is Coming After Me from Josue Michels on the German army changing their, or Germany changing the law, so they want Germans living abroad to register. But perhaps we can just finish up with this article, another from Mr. Flurry, Don't Deceive Yourself, which I think ties into to what we were just talking about, even with some of the points on iconography, where he really asked the question, what is your natural response to correction? You know, we're told something different from the way we grew up or the way that we were taught. I mean, really, we aim to do this probably with every Trumpet issue. We aim to have correction. I mean, we aim to be corrected ourselves by some of these articles. And you know, even this article, you know, don't deceive yourself. There are points there where I can look at myself and be like, yeah, no, I don't like being corrected. And it's not really rational. We want that in every issue. And this makes the point. Well, God tells us we need correction and reproof. We must learn to listen and heed. In fact, we should want correction. And so this goes into the way that we are very good at deceiving ourselves into thinking that we don't need correction, or that the correction is unjust, or even that we're taking on board the correction, because we're maybe nodding and agreeing with it, but then not actually doing it. So an article really designed to pierce through objections, or to pierce through and get to the core of, okay, well, here's a message. What do we do when we hear something that disagrees with us? And do we change? And if not, why not?
Yeah, this is another part of that training, right? That we need to be trained to overcome our own self-deception. We have it. We've had it from our very first parents. We deceive ourselves very, very much, very deeply. And yeah, it's like you said, it's not rational, because we want to be correct in how we think and how we live. The only possible source for what is correct is the Creator. He conveys that to us. It's different than how we think, or what's comfortable, or what we've always done. And so there is a battle there. And so again, like with the smart ones, expect a battle. Expect it to be a challenge. Expect it to be hard, and you have to grapple with it. But God gives us a lot in His Word, and that's the, you know, all the good and the things that are correct come from the Creator. And we just have to constantly be, you know, pushing and fighting and struggling like an astronaut going through the hardest part of the training to continue to put our own self-deception down, to continue to put our own, well, this is what I think about that, or I'll be the judge of that type of attitude. You know, which, I mean, in documented history, that attitude came from Lucifer, from Satan, like that, you know, taking of that prerogative for oneself to say, I will choose what is evil and what is good. That's documented history that didn't happen until Lucifer, and that the serpent introduced that to humanity. We've all got it as a core part of us ever since. Not by birth, but just by his influence. And so this is hard training. Don't expect it to be harder than giving up a smartphone. And the principles of living kind of goes along with it. Wage war on sin in your life. It's a war. It's a struggle. It's hard, but being like our Creator, being unlike what we are, unlike what the source of evil has influenced us to be, and more like our Creator, is the whole process that we have, like you just said, have to get right on earth so that we can take it out to the stars, so that we can fulfill our incredible potential, because it is incredible. But of course, it's going to take work. It's going to take struggle. It's going to take fighting. So that really, it really makes sense. And thankfully, God does love us. He does give us the key things to do to overcome and to focus on, so that we can grow in that and we can eventually fulfill that potential.
I think that's a great conclusion to the magazine. So thank you so much for joining us, Philip, and for that. We have been talking about the Trumpet Print magazine that you can get on our website, thetrumpet.com. You can go and you can read all the articles we've been talking about right now. You just scroll down a little bit on the front page and it's you'll see the cover, Lift Up Your Eyes, and then right under that, sign up, and we'd be very happy to send you your free print copies that look a lot nicer than this one that I don't have the print copy with me yet that I've just printed out. Philip does have the genuine article, so we'd be very, very happy to send you that every month. Well, we'll be back with our regular Week in Review show, where we look at more of the weekly review, the what's gone on over the last 7 days, and how that ties into, well, God's space program, really, and Bible prophecy, and what God is doing on this earth, and correcting mankind, and preparing mankind to go out into the universe. That is the grand vision behind all of that. So we will be back on Friday. Until then, keep watching your world.